Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright
lights. We have tonight's guest, award-winning theater and circ director and author of The Power of Ha, Stephen Hayes.
Night sky. Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Brian Nolan. I am Mark Legere, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Thanks to a conversation with our guest, I hadn't thought of something in a long time, and that is the joy of going to the circus as a child. And I have to say that one of my favorite acts was the High Wire Act, for a lot of reasons. It was fascinating to me, and I would hold my breath and watch, and it was interesting and well done and scary at the same time, like, because there's a little bit of, you know, danger, or a lot. But then I remember the first time seeing this, a clown came out and acted like he was going to do what the High Wire artists had done. And he did. And it was amazing because he did it, and he looked like he was falling, and we gasp as kids, and we'd be in suspense, and then he'd fall on the wire in a funny way, like he hurt himself, and then we'd laugh, and then he'd bring us back into suspense and back and forth. And I don't remember exactly when it was, but it was sometime later, as I surely had grown up, I thought back, or I saw somebody else do it, or might have seen a Cirque du Soleil show and thought this, that the clown actually had to have the exact same skills that the trapeze artist had, only more. And he used them. So he might have even had to have been better. I mean, on the High Wire, he might have had to even been better on the High Wire, because he just worked with everything else, so the face and the body and he had to pretend like he was falling and then catch himself. I actually don't know how that's done, like, as if balancing and walking and dancing on a wire isn't hard enough, and then doing it 30 feet in the air isn't hard enough, a clown would convincingly pretend he doesn't know how to do it and pretend to fall and catch himself. I mean, anyway, so the art of clowning might have been one of the most important art that we saw in those shows. And it's interesting that it was rarely talked about as how skillful that clown was. We'd laugh and, oh, he was funny or something, but how skillful, what talent, like what work that had to take. It's interesting too that when we're kids and we were playing, I would hear things like, stop clowning around, or stop being silly, or he thinks he's being funny. Actually, I still hear that as an adult, but thankfully not towards me. So maybe there we have it. We stop clowning around. And I think it's a good time that we start more. And I can't wait to learn more about this art form from a master teacher in just a moment.
Oh, you've definitely heard people say that you're trying to be funny.
I knew you were going to say that.
What a profound insight. Oh, you had me thinking about similar experiences. And then I thought about all of the guidance away from joy that we get. And then you expanded on that. And then I wondered, I wonder what it would be like if we did more of that in life. If we played around with things, and maybe we wouldn't be so afraid to fall or to stumble or whatever the case may be, right? We take things so serious, and there's so much pressure and so little joy. And maybe our guests can give us some insights as to how to flip the script.
Well, I can say actually that there was so much insight and joy in our conversation, and I've started reading his book, and there's so much insight there and learnings. As you said, Mark, he's an award-winning theater and cirque director. He's a comic act designer and a master teacher and author of The Power of Ha. Welcome, Stefan Haves, to the Life Changes Show.
Hello.
Hello. You had me at hello.
Yes, I'm so depressed.
Oh.
Just kidding. No, it's just the expectation is so high that I'm going to give you this magic bullet of comedy. But just to let you know, I'm struggling along with everybody else on the planet. And that's why you loved that clown.
Mm.
Because someone can have skill up above, but who is the bridge to the audience? Who is the bridge to the child? The clown is. And the clown was the one who we cared that he succeeded, as opposed to look at the amazing. So empathy flooded in for the audience, for that clown, because he was one of us if he's doing it well. And he's actually captivating us as if it is his first time, and you buy into that, and then you love him.
Wow. Wow. This, what you just said, it applies to everything. And actually, this is a good bridge to everything, because what you just said, we need in everything, the empathy and the, go on, please. I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
better than I do.
Right. I don't even know. I'm just trying to discover it just now. See, I can't be an expert here. As I told you in our conversation earlier, as a teacher of clown, I'm not teaching you anything. I'm allowing you a safe container to remember when you were freaking brilliant with your buddy when you were 6 and 7 and 8 years old, when you didn't have the super ego just pummeling you with shame. Like, I just want us all to go back to that point, because we all have spirit and we all have freedom. And if there's anything I teach, and there's anything when I guide a circus act, a cirque clown act, it's liberty and choices. And if they don't like me, I can pivot. Clowning is one of the only art forms where if you go down the wrong path and you start to lose the audience, you remain conscious and you can pivot or say, I'm sorry, I went down the wrong path. And then you keep going.
Wow. Again, we could use this skill for anything in our life. My gosh, relationships, work, anything, daily interactions. You mentioned empathy. When we spoke, you also mentioned vulnerability, which I didn't factor that in when I was a kid, and I never thought about it since. So please talk to us about that.
Well, first of all, a circus is a live art form, and it has to be a live art form. Even Cirque du Soleil tried to do a television show and they failed at it. And it's the reason you described in your first anecdote is that sense of peril needs to be part of the equation. And so for the juggler, is he going to keep all the objects in the air? If for the high wire act, is he going to fall? And for the clown, is he going to keep us on his side because he's just making it up in the here and now? So this is what makes circus so wonderful, is that there is the awe, A-W-E, and I provide the ha, and those two things together make for, that's kind of all we need in life. It doesn't matter if it's Cirque du Soleil on the Vegas Strip, or if we're in the Himalayas and there's a little sadhu old guy who brings a sheep to go across the rocks and across a little tightrope himself, and the whole town just looks in amazement. So that sense of awe. But the thing that's important today is it's a collective sense of awe. The problem with the phones and doing video games by yourself and all that, it's not a collective experience. It's a solitary experience, which leads to depression, which leads to a culture out of alignment. And so the need for circus, or the need for everyone watching the same thing and having the same reaction, is a very human communal need, which is disappearing today.
Sadly, very sadly. So you obviously are making a point for this being very important. I'm not sure I know, or we know collectively, why it's important.
Well, one thing that's important about the arts and where we're at is everybody is getting captured by the 2D. Like, I'm in Vegas right now, and the Sphere is here, and it's almost like we're all getting into a very passive, hallucinogenic place when it comes to the 2D holographic world that we're entering. However, the circus keeps the audience active by not showing so much, and they have to actually work at filling in the space. The best director that Cirque du Soleil ever had was Franco Dragone, and he would he was more of an artist. He would paint. He would put a little three people dancing to the left, one guy on a tightrope, and then someone diving into the water. And then your brain had to put that together and make a story. Today, in today's world, we are becoming passive in the art form. And circus provides a place for us all to fill in the blanks still, because it is so human generated when it's good.
If somebody were to want to do what you're doing, you started in the streets, and you were like learning your way and making mistakes, as you shared. Are those mistakes important? And do you say to somebody, go learn in the streets, or both, learn here too? Or
I would say, first of all, there's no mistakes. I did this when I was 21. I was a brat from West LA. I didn't know anything about the street. To be a good street performer, you have to be a street brawler. You have to be able to deal with homeless people walking through, crack addicts, da 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 da. And I wasn't very good on the street. But I was in my early 20s, and as I've told my daughter, the 20s is learning what you don't want to do, not what you want to do. So ultimately, any little field trip you do is technically not a mistake. It's a put that in the bucket of things that I don't want to do anymore. And then I'm moving forward. And then hopefully you keep going. But the notion of mistake and failure provides a byproduct of shame, and shame is the clown's enemy. I think everybody that comes into my class, they say, oh, I'm shy. And I say, well, shy is selfish, because you are selfish because you're choosing who you're going to share your spirit with. You'll do it with your friends and family, but when you come into a room with strangers, you're saying, oh, I'm going to withhold. So what I want you to be able to do in clown class is to be able to be generous with all your ideas. And the judge and jury is the audience. You'll feel the calibration of failure for a second. What is failure? That's not lack of connection. That's not failure. That's lack of connection. And there is always a pivot to connection.
Wow. So in the process, a clown learns, or you started out as a juggler, actually, right? In the streets.
I was
as an actor.
Yes, I was an actor in LA because I grew up in LA. So I was doing commercials when I was 15 and 16 years old, you know. So I was doing that, and then I got into improv comedy, and then I had a really, really good professor from Czechoslovakia who there's one thing that all clowns have in common, and that is trouble with authority figures. Okay. For me to be a good actor in Hollywood, I got to be a dog. But clowns are cats. They're doing their own thing. So I don't even call myself a clown director. I call myself a clown wrangler. And I got these weird stallions who are all trying to one up my authority. And it gives me so much pleasure to be in a room of people who hate authority, because with my background, that's something that I had to deal with. And so I love being the person who I watch the adjustments of them trying to take me down. That's immense pleasure.
Well, so actually perfect. So you studied acting, or you acted, and now you're a master clown teacher. What is the difference?
Okay. Good question. The clown master that I worked with in Paris is a guy named Philippe Goliat, and people like Richard Rush, Emma Thompson, like some of the best actors in the world have worked this clowning. And basically good acting and good clowning is the same, because both of them require a truth. Now, the truth of an actor is they're going to endow themselves as another character. The clown is trying desperately to be another character, but he's just himself with a stupid hat. But he is always himself, doing the best he can in the here and now. So the conceit of a who, what, and where of somewhere else isn't there. It's just a schmuck on stage doing the best he can and finding the rhythm or finding the game.
Wow. Okay. Well, I've got to mention before we go on a break, really briefly, I want to touch on the Backman.
Okay. Yes.
It's hard to describe.
Did I give you a link to it? Because
no, hey, I found it on my own.
Oh, good.
A couple Stephen of
Hames,
them.
Stephen Hames Backman. Yes. And basically, I had a hard time at the first clown school I went to, and I left. I actually dropped out of clown school because I didn't think they were funny, and I was very judgmental of the teachers. But while I was at that school, I was doing a exercise on breath, and I was in the yoga plow position, and I realized that I had a vertebrae that was sticking out, and it looked like a nose. So I put two dots above it while I'm in with my butt in the air, legs over the head, and the two dots became eyes. And I realized I could write in that position, and it had a whole life. So, I won $10,000 on America's Funniest People. And then I had an old vaudeville manager named Gil Miller, who told me that I could go to Europe and do TV shows all over the world. And I ended up doing it, not with him, but with someone else. I did a Fresno gig with him, but I went to Europe with a Parisian agent. And so I did... this variety act all over the world.
Brilliant. And you made enough money to support your family with that, right?
Yes, I did.
Literally working your back.
Yes. Ouch. Yes.
Okay. So we are, as you can tell, we are talking to a master teacher of clown. It's Stefan Haves. And his book, we're going to talk about when we come back, The Power of Ha. We've already talked a little bit about it. And some of these stories are in there for sure. And so many more. And so many lessons, actually. You can go to StefanHaves.com. And that's Stefan, S-T-E-F-A-N, Haves, H-A-V-E-S.com. A little later, we'll have our Ask Dorothy segment. And then joining us on the show is our performance guest, Brian Nolan, all on the Life Changes Show online edition when we come back after this.
Want to connect with amazing people who are committed to making a difference? From the Heart Tribe is a platform, community, and movement with the purpose of bringing like-minded humans together to help animals and the environment in order to gain a stronger connection and understanding of the world around us. They're dedicated to effectuating positive change by empowering individuals to organize meaningful and engaging experiences that build compassion for animals and the natural environment. Their founders and members' passion is to inspire others to actively get involved in their homes, their communities, and the world, to raise awareness about the issues we face, and most of all, to be part of the solution. Through their efforts, they have also accomplished some amazing and tangible achievements. Their Pickup for Paradise beach cleanups have collected over 50,000 pieces of foreign debris. And also, thanks to animal rescue and recovery volunteers, over 30% of the volunteers have become vegan or reduced their meat intake. Daily habits make a big difference. Please join any of their upcoming events by going to fthtt.org and signing up for their newsletter. You can also follow on Instagram and Facebook at From the Heart Tribe. Have you felt inspired to meditate but you just can't? Do you suffer from anxiety but fidget toys just make you more fidgety? Want to replace negative self-talk in your head that keeps bringing you down? Introducing the latest self-help solution, Phi Beads. Transformational beaded jewelry inspired by ancient wisdom, science, math, and psychology. All Phi beads are designed to incorporate the powerful Fibonacci sequence, nature's mathematical formula that has shaped our existence from the beginning of time. The Fibonacci sequence, also known as the golden mean or the golden ratio, is recognized by our conscious and unconscious mind and resonates as order out of chaos, like we see in plants, flowers, seashells, ocean waves, the pyramids, and in our own body. Not only beautiful, they feel good to wear. Phi beads can help anchor tranquility, positivity, focus, and structure in your life by doing the Phi meditation. Phi meditation helps you harness the power of I am, or intention, affirmation, and manifestation. Affirm the life you want. Get your set of Phi beads at phibeads.com. That's Phi, P-H-I, beads.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We are back and we are having a great conversation with Stefan Haves, and we are going to dive a little bit more into The Power of Ha, his new book that has recently just come out, became a number one bestseller on Amazon. And the subtitle is Connecting Through the Heart of Humor. What is at the heart of humor that we need to connect with, Stefan?
Well, as I said before, humor, the heart of humor is different than laughter. The heart of humor, once again, like I said earlier, is all about connecting with others. And that connection is so needed and necessary in this day and age. So you know, everybody says to me, like I go to a party and I say I work with clowns and they go, oh, make me laugh. I go, oh, you're a CPA, balance my checkbook. I mean, it's like everybody wants a result, or they say I'm scared of clowns. And there's a real reason why people are afraid of clowns in the United States. I mean, they've been demonized in the movies. They've been laughed at in the movies. They've been, you know, there's been, you know, people, mass murderers who were clowns. But ultimately, the clown is an important archetype. Now, ultimately, there is the sideshow clown where it's scary. But ultimately, what's interesting to me is the clown that challenges the status quo. Doesn't toe the line, but finds out where the line is.
Wow. And somehow actually crosses into, you say, healer.
Yes. They it is a healer, and it is the truth teller. It is absolutely the truth teller. You know, right now our society is skewing towards a very fragile young generation who made it through the pandemic, who have a lot of burden on their shoulders in terms of racial divide, sexual divide, all of these things. And the clown can look at these particular issues and guilelessly, innocently address them, as opposed to with an agenda. I just did a show at Tim Robbins, the Actors Gang. It was a Christmas show. And I knew my thesis was two things. I knew I needed to make it immersive because nobody wants to sit and watch someone else. They want to be part of something else. And the second one was I had to make it gender fluid because that's important in this day and age. So I did a NASA holiday space party where all the NASA nerds were drag kings and all their wives were like Mad Men drag queens. But this was a family-friendly show, and I didn't even make it about the cross-dressing. I made it about the vulnerability and comedy of somebody sitting in a chair and falling down or something. And kids would go, and then they'd bring their friends the next day, and we were sold out. So it's an important thesis in this day and age when we're so reactive and ready to cancel or ready to stop certain arts, or we're ready to burn a book. It's like the clown can link both sides together in laughter.
It's interesting you mentioned, well, this day and age, and when I shared with you that I saw one of your projects, Full Moon, you asked me where I saw it, right, specifically for a reason.
Yes, I did.
And please share that, because we're in that kind of time, only worse, I think.
Yes, absolutely. Part of the reason Full Moon did so well in Los Angeles is because there was one of the biggest earthquakes that we had to endure in this city, and people were tiptoeing back out into the world. And when they saw two clowns and wonderful music, it was a healthy respite, and it was a vacation in their brain for what might occur in the big scheme of things. And today we have global warming and all that, you know, so it's like it's as you said, it's much more severe in this climate today.
And so I was saying when we were talking earlier that this work is so important more than ever, and we don't laugh enough, we don't experience enough of this live. You know, you didn't mention it, but you were hinting also at not just 2D but AI, which you have no fear of.
Yes, I have no fear of AI, because all I care about is the live theater, my contact with another with a group of folks. And so that's not going to, I don't believe that it can replace the communal seduction of spectators and performers.
You actually, when we were talking about Bachman, it when you say the communal seduction, you remind me of something you said that I not heard about and I was fascinated by, collective hallucination.
That's right. I mean, the nice thing that you do in theater, if you don't hit it on the head or you're not doing naturalistic theater where you're just trying to replicate, you know, kitchen sink naturalism, is once again, it's like what I was talking about with Franco Dragone and the success of Cirque du Soleil is that you have to be active where your mind is putting things together. And you're doing that next to your family and next to all these other people. So there's a collective hallucination in the moment. And your story is different from the person you're sitting next to's story, but it's the one that heals you. That's your healing story. And even if you all have a different story, that's the one you chose to give yourself solace and warmth and healing.
Wow. Okay. So you've mentioned Cirque du Soleil for many reasons, many times, because you have been such a big part of it and have contributed so much to it. What is the inner child aspect of Cirque du Soleil?
I mean, there's a couple of things that Cirque du Soleil, on one hand, they were way ahead of, they were able to, like the sense of hallucination, the dream world that we go into, and the archetypal journey, the hero's journey, they were able to link the hero's journey with the best athletes in the world. And they didn't do it with animals, and they did the costumer was amazing, the music was amazing. But it was the crossover, like plant medicine can be, like psilocybin can be, but it was once again a shared hallucination in the flesh. Now, the nice thing that I was able to do whenever I worked with them was, my job is the interstitial. So it's not the actual acts, it's the 30 seconds of the person walking off stage while another one walks on. What is their relationship in that moment, and how do I pay it off so the audience goes, oh my gosh, he was scared of him and now he vanquished him later. So I would, but once again, I did it in pictures. I didn't hit you over the head with the narrative.
Wow. Well, as I'm reading the book, you're sharing so much. You're not hitting us over the head. You're being very vulnerable and just putting it out there. What do you want the reader to come away with? Because I'm not done yet. So, like, what should I be walking away with in your mind after reading The Power of Ha?
After reading The Power of Ha, I want you to, when I sign people's books, I say the power of you.
Oh,
the limitations that you create for yourself are a mirage. They are not real. And ultimately that shyness, that withholding of your dreams, you can actually try, because you know something? The consequences aren't really that scary. And you will replay trauma from your past when you were in fourth grade and everybody laughed at you, something happened to you. But while you get on stage over and over again, your own trauma will release and you'll get bored by it. And then you'll start to turn your lens away from your own pain and to other folks. And that's when the clown becomes the healer.
So the on stage could be a metaphor for any aspect of our lives.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. It doesn't matter. And all we're doing is telling stories. And it doesn't matter if we tell it through song, tell it through artistry, dance, movement. And even if you just go out on a Saturday night and dance, to go to a silent disco and once a week. I mean, what stories do you want to tell? Because we all have stories that are worthy. And if we don't withhold, our lives will be immeasurably more full of spirit. And that spirit will combat the 2D autocratic nature of what is coming towards us in the technological world.
Wow. Well, we've titled this episode, thanks to you, The Power of Ha, which is your book, and Be the Most Authentic You, which are aspects that are possible through this kind of work, correct?
Absolutely, yes.
So,
and it takes work. You have to really, you can't live in a victim triangle of prey, predator, and rescuer. You gotta turn the lens away from others and put it on yourself and say, what do I want with these other souls who are equal to me? As opposed to, oh, this audience hates me. Oh, they da da da, whatever stories you're giving yourself that prevents you from performing to your potential.
Wow. Wow. The Power of Ha. Find it where books are sold online. It's the number one bestseller on Amazon, or it was at one point. Stefan Haves, StefanHaves.com. You can also find him on Facebook as well. We have his links at Life Changes Show page for Stefan. And we have a video, but maybe we need to also put the video. If you send us a link, Stefan, we'll put the video of Backman.
Okay, will do.
What a pleasure getting to connect with you and share your wisdom. I trust there'll be more.
Okay, well, thank you. And thank you, Mark, for this.
Yes. Absolutely. Thank you for being here. It's just absolutely brilliant. We have so much more to learn from you.
All right. Well, thank you. I have a lot to learn from me too, but I just have to wait and see what's
you'll
well,
have to
we'll
wait
stand
for
by
second.
for the sequel, The Power of Haha.
Right, exactly.
And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Tracy in Los Angeles. I was just informed that a good friend of mine has passed away, and I'm so very sad. She and her two sisters and I used to hang out together quite often when we all lived in Los Angeles. And even though they all moved to Arizona, we have remained close through social media. I am having difficulty in releasing the pain of her passing and need some help with coping with the loss. Do you have any suggestions that will assist me in moving through this painful experience?
My dear Tracy, dealing with death is one of life's greatest challenges, and my heart goes out to you at this difficult time. I lovingly suggest that you take some time off for yourself to cope with your loss so you can process your feelings. This could be a great time for you to reunite with your loving family members so they can assist you in your grieving process. You mentioned that you, she, and her sisters hung out together often. So the first step you might wish to take is to contact the sisters and help them with their grieving process, and this will help you. Talking about the good times you shared could bring some peace to all of you. Another thing that I do when someone I know and love passes is to write a letter to them, reminding them of how much they mean to me and how grateful I am for their being a part of my life. Knowing that our souls live forever, I go into a meditative state and read the letter to their higher self from my higher self, and this helps me cope with the loss. I trust that you will love yourself through this process and take the time needed to move through this painful loss.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at AskDorothy@LifeChangesShow.com.
And we'll be right back with our performance guest, singer, songwriter, guitarist, Brian Nolan, here on the Life Changes Show Online Edition, right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show, broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We're back, and our performance guest tonight is singer, songwriter, guitarist Brian Nolan. Brian, all the way from Arkansas, welcome to the Life Changes Show.
Hello, Filippo. How are you doing?
Good to finally connect with you. I saw you were going to be performing with some friends of mine, and then when I was a little jealous, I thought, I haven't been in LA in so long, and here you were from Arkansas coming to LA to perform. Good on you.
Man, it's so cool. It really is. I'll kind of explain how we got all this together. The beginning of the pandemic, where everybody was sitting at home, and we went to Facebook and we started doing live streams, and you know, all the time. And they're actually, I have connections with people all over the world now because of that. But Brian Pizzoni was one of the first people in LA that I saw, and he was playing Blackbird on piano. And if you've ever heard him play, oh my goodness gracious. But so I met him through that, and we started talking, and another friend, Toby Simmons, and then Jennifer Biggs Walton. And Toby said, hey, come out here, on one of my posts. Jennifer said, hey, I've got a place you can stay for a little bit if somebody else can. So I ended up going, I think it was last November was my first trip out there. And then we had another one in January and then in July. But what we do is we kind of, there's five of us. It's Jennifer Biggs Walton on violin, Brian Pizzoni on piano, Oliver Walton on cello, Bob Borge on harmonica, and then I play guitar and sing. And we do these house concerts.
Another good thing, house concerts, another good thing that came out of the pandemic. So you strive for peace, love, and music. So this is all part of what we're needing. So tell us what that inspiration is for you.
Well, it's just, I was listening to that earlier
with Stefan.
Yes. Yeah. And he said so many things that, art they're all alike in that way. I'm searching for peace. I'm playing music for people to bring them a good time. Of course, I want everybody to love everybody. And that's a hard thing to do, but, you know, it's work. And so the peace, love, and music, we're striving for peace and love. And music just encapsulates all of everything that we do. I mean, a song could be about, what was I thinking there? Well, it's gone now. But well, it could be about anything, you know.
Well, it's interesting because in relation to the story that you told me earlier, peace, love, and music is all you really wanted. And yes. So you describe to the audience, if you would, why music was so important in your life as a child.
All right. Growing up, we listened to a lot of music. My mom and dad divorced when I was 6 years old, and music was always the moment we were all okay. Everything was good. And that goes from, you know, then to the also the healing of the divorce. I remember my dad, one of the first summers I went to see him after the divorce, he pulled out a Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen. I remember hearing just that whole album. But the one that really got me was Ooh, I'm on fire. And, you know, it just, music can heal you, and it helps you learn about yourself a lot.
Well, speaking of healing, you wrote a song, and we're going to get to hear it now, that's pre-recorded. Yes. For your sister.
Yes.
And I asked you if it was a love song, because I heard it, and I thought it was a love song, and it is. Love song to your sister.
Yes. My sister's older than I am, and I saw a lot of bad relationships throughout many years of her life. But this is something I didn't say earlier. We're military brats. And my sister met her first boyfriend in Athens, Greece, when we lived there. Then we move away, and all these years in between, well, that's because of Facebook. Again, because of Facebook, they found each other many, many years later and got back together. And they're just like, I don't have to worry about my sister anymore. He's a great man. She's happy as can be. I did play this song at their wedding 20 years ago. So the song is that old. But I finally found the right people to help me perform it or record it, which that's Jennifer Biggs Walton is on violin. Brian Pezzoni's on piano. Oliver Walton on
nice.
And then Brian Wolverton, upright bass. Pat Lindsay on percussion. But it's...
Well, we're gonna hear it. Let's not say any more about it. Here's Brian Nolan's pre-recorded song Blue Sky here on the Life Changes Show.
Spoken, she
Brian Nolan. Now, I'm going to spell Brian's name, and then as far as his links are concerned, I'm going to refer you to the Life Changes Show webpage for Brian Nolan. So it's Brian with an I, and then Nolan is N-A-H-L-E-N. So thank you for sharing that with us, Brian. And it's good to know all of our friends are on the on the recording.
It's so cool, man.
It's so cool. Speaking of so cool, the next song we're going to play, unfortunately, we're going to have to, like, that was faded. And and this next song, unfortunately, we're going to have to fade. But it goes on like one of these 70s rock songs. Like I haven't heard in a long time. So, and we don't know how to call that, but it's cool. So you'll have to get the song, if you want to hear the rest of it, but we're going to play a clip here. But before we do, we were talking about it and you had the title.
Yes.
And then.
And then that was it, man. No, and then, you know, scrolling through Facebook, and I have a bunch of pages, planetary, the universe, this NASA, all this kind of stuff. And I saw this picture that was taken by the Mars orbiter of the Earth and the Moon. And it's quite a striking shot. It's so beautiful, and it's so just, that's us right there, man. There we are. So I saw that picture, I had that title, and it happened. You know, sometimes these just in 30 minutes, you write a song, but this was one of those moments. And I wrote the lyrics to it, and then we developed the ending to it. But the first half of the song was written within 30 minutes one evening, but it just, of how beautiful life is here, but how hard we struggle and all the things we go through, it's really tough at times. And I know a lot of people going through hard times, and I wanted to write something to help lift us up.
Well, thank you for that. And here's Brian Nolan's pre-recorded song, Hiding Behind Blue Skies, on the Life Changes Show.
Hiding behind blue skies, living with all these lies.
I can't take anymore.
Working out in my mind, tell myself it's gonna be alright.
Rings falling down my face,
never thought I'd be the one lost in space.
Unraveling dark worlds,
hoping the sun's gonna make them shine. Skies, living with all these lies.
I can't take anymore.
Working it out in my mind, tell myself it's gonna be alright. Stars that shine their brightest, in the darkest places. Rise and shine, rise and shine, rise and
And there it is, Brian Nahlen. Again, Brian with an I and then N-A-H-L-E-N. And his links and a video are on the webpage for Brian on the Life Changes Show website. Brian, what a pleasure connecting. And maybe we'll get to perform someday in L.A. together.
Oh, that would be lovely. I'll let you know next time I'm out there.
I'll have to call Jennifer.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much
for having me on the show.
It's our pleasure. All the best to you. And with a big thank you to Brian Nahlen, and then a big thank you to Stefan Haves. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Legere, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio, reminding you that as your life changes, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at the Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.